Well, well, well. I guess the best way I can start is by addressing some of the new people in the room that are probably thinking this thought. So that is Andy Stanley. Yes, it is. Ish, kind of, sort of. You know, I feel like there's a lot that we have similar, a couple minor differences, but I would say there are more similarities than not. I think the first thing that we have is we both are the same waist size, which is a tribute to him because he is older, can we say? No, okay, yes, let's just say that he's had more opportunities to eat in life than I have. I'll just say that. And I think it's awesome that he grew up listening to Tupac and Biggie also. I think that's a really great thing. Or is it Elton John? I can't quite remember. But it's really, really awesome that I get to be standing here. And I always just get kind of giddy when I stand in front of people. And I say, you know, one of the biggest things that I get to do as I stand here and I look out is I get to see friends and I get to see coworkers and I see students and I see some small group leaders. And I'm always like, you know, it's just one of those privileges I have when I get to stand and I get to welcome the members and the unmembers of this church, of quite possibly what I consider the greatest church in the land. And one of the best privileges, oh yeah, share it back. And one of the best privileges I have is walking all about town and I get to bump into you guys and I get to hear those stories about how it impacted you and I get to essentially fellowship with you guys all throughout the community, not just within these walls. And it's really, really big privilege. It's not always a privilege, though. It's not always something I look forward to. I'll be honest with you. There are days that I don't love having to work at a church. When I'm out and about and everyone knows you work at a church, it doesn't always play to your favor. I was actually in a cell phone place the other day. You know, cell phone providers, they have a way of just being able to get you there. I don't even know where there is, but they can somehow get you there. And so here I am at the counter, and the girl knew that I worked at North Point, and she kind of blah, blah, and we got to exchange some words, and it got a little bit tense, I can say, and I ended up leaning across the counter, and I said, let me make it very clear to you, I'm not Andy Stanley, okay? There ain't nothing riding on me for North Point, okay? So you're going to get this message between me and you very clearly, okay? It was a serious moment, and I'm like, listen, it's not always favorable, but it's something that I have to just deal with, and it's something that I do love at the end of the day, and I absolutely love my pastor. I love how he teaches, I love how he leads, but most importantly, personally, I can say I love how he loves. And that means a lot to me to be able to stand on this stage, because it's still crazy for me. I remember 7 years ago, my friend and I had just moved down here from Ohio, and he was teaching a lady tennis, and he had told her, hey, it's hard for us to find a home. It wasn't that rough. Ooh, they're like, goodness gracious. No. Hard for us to find a home church. And she said, hey, if you're looking for a home church, there's this great church out in Alpharetta. It's on North Point Parkway. It's called North Point Community Church. And he came home, and he said it. He was like, hey, check this out. And I was like, okay, cool, come on, maybe check it out. I don't know, we'll see. We're busy. I don't know. Well, not a big deal. It wasn't anything special. A couple months later, I asked, I said, hey, what's that church? He said, North Point. I said, let's come check it out. And I still remember I sat in that seat in the very, very back against that wall. The guy was looking at me like, oh my gosh, he's pointing right at me. Yes, I'm pointing right at you. That's where I sat. I sat right there. And I still remember my first thought when I looked. I said, is that fog on stage? That's a big deal to somebody like me from Ohio. The only time we had fog in Ohio was during our Easter production when we had Jesus raised from the tomb, you know, and he's just walking out and the whole church was like, glory, he's risen! And I'm like, cue the fog, we need more fog, happy Easter! The big moment, and I'm like, they got fog for the welcome. He's like, welcome to North Point, all the fog. I don't know what I'm talking about at this point. But I was thinking, wow, here I am, and I'm standing here on this stage now, and the beauty of my life is I get a chance to work with students all throughout our 5 campuses, and I can't tell you how much I love that. I always tell people there's nothing like that moment when a student looks in your eyes and you can see that they get it, and there's nothing like hugging them and know that you're holding to the future. And nowadays, I don't have a lot of chances to have a lot of conversations with them and hear about all the life change that's happening, but I know that it's happening when they're small groups. And so I get a chance to have a lot of coffees with a lot of the leaders, and they sit across the table from me, and they always tell me all the awesome things that are happening in the groups. And I'm like, thanks for just lending your time, and thanks for sharing part of you so that they can grow. But I always start my meeting with an adult the same way. I say, hey, can you share your story with me? Can you share your story with me? And then they begin to unlock something that happened in their past or something that was said to them in their past or an experience they went through in their past that shaped their reason as to why they now want to come back and work with middle school, work with high school students. And it's for this reason that they know that they can help and that they can pour into this next generation. I think that's so awesome. And then we get a chance to hear all these videos every single week of all these students that say, hey, thanks so much. And the reason why I'm getting baptized today is because my small group leaders. Thanks so much to my small group leaders. Or thanks to my parents. Or thanks to that friend that had that conversation. And that got me kind of thinking. And I said, you know, there's something special about what we say to each other. When we're talking to one another. When we're asking each other requests of each other. When we're inviting each other to church. And I said, you know, there's something beautiful about this transparent place that we get to with each other. And just like I sit across the table and I say, hey, can you share your story? I thought, well, you know what? I kind of have a story too. And we all know that there's so much to learn from each other's stories. Now, anyone that knows me knows that I'm not one to just crack open and tell you all about my personal life. That's just not how I'm wired. It's never how I've been wired. I'm a pretty private person. But I have my friend who's the pastor at Brownsbridge, Clay, and a lot of you know that Clay and I are really, really good friends, and he sure enough took me to lunch and said, hey, I want to hear your story. I'm like, no, don't pull that one on me. I know that trick. He said, no, really, Joe, I want you to tell me your story. And sure enough, he cracks me open, and I just start pouring out all that my life was about, and we start crying, and we're crying over our Subway meatball subs as if they're not salty enough. And people are looking at us, and they're like, why are two people crying in a Subway? I'm like, because we're Christians, and Christians are transparent. And he asked me, he says, Joe, why? Why don't you share this story? And I was like, listen, I don't want people to know all about my life. I don't want people all in my business. That's just not how I'm wired. And he said, no, you really should share it. And deep down, I knew he was right. Because deep down, I already knew the biggest truth. And that is a story that's untold doesn't help anyone. And so I said, you know what? Maybe I do need to say, I do need to feel comfortable standing on a stage and saying, you know what, there's so much I learned in life and there's so much that happened just in my little story. And maybe if you listen, maybe you'll be able to connect. Maybe not with all the events, but you can at least connect with the mindsets because something happened. Someone said something when I was just this age sitting in a desk just like this that allows me to stand right here and say what I'm saying to you. And just a couple weeks ago, I had a conversation with a lady sitting in a stool very similar to this. And I had to think, wow, if I never had this conversation, I could have never had this type of conversation. So I said, okay, maybe that's a great place to start. And I thought, okay, what kind of scripture could I find in the Bible that can kind of capture how I feel right now? And I went to a scripture that I always lean on, Ephesians 4:29. And the scripture says this, do not let any unwholesome talk come out your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And I think, you know what? There's something really, really beautiful about that. But I think, yeah, a lot of people are going to look at that and be like, yeah, we already know that, Joe. There's nothing special about that. But I say, no, when I really dove into my life, when I really thought back at all the conversations that I had, the things that were said here that allow me to stand here and say what I say, it ties right back into a scripture just like that. So I said, you know what? Here I am. I'm going to bear it all. I'm going to just tell y'all the story. You're going to like some parts. You might not like some parts. I'm going to put y'all in my business. Hopefully you guys are ready for it. But my hope is that you can hopefully hear my heart. And so it starts with this. I was born in Akron, Ohio. I oftentimes tell people that Goodyear factories were started in Akron, and then LeBron James is from Akron. Goodyear factories closed before I was born, and LeBron James took his talents to South Beach, and that's Akron, Ohio. I oftentimes like to say that I took my talents to North Point Community Church. It's up for you to decide who's doing the greater work, but I will say that he fights for the ring, I fight for the king. That's all I'll say about that. My mother was an incredible single mom of three incredibly handsome young men. John, Joseph, and Justin. John being the oldest, myself and Justin being the two younger twins. And there was nothing we loved more than our mama. Her dad and my dad and her divorced when we were just babies. So we didn't see him around much. He would always pick us up every other weekend. But he was remarried. And as a fourth grade, he had some hard times. And he decided that the first thing that had to go would be us. So he stopped picking us up. And I remember we were so conflicted. We were so confused. We were so upset.
We would always get together and we get to trashing on him and talking about what kind of dad doesn't pick his kids up. He's nothing and he's this and he's that. And I remember my mom would walk in and she would say, you don't understand all that adults do. You may not understand why your dad did what he did, but he is your father and it's your place to respect him. Don't let me catch you talking about your dad like that again. Okay. She was that kind of mom. She was my first standard of Christianity I saw right in front of my face, a strong woman of God. And I still look to her. I still text her before I walk on stage and just say, hey, Mom, I'm about to walk out there. She says, I'm praying for you. She was my standard, and I loved her more than anything. Still do. I should say she's not passed away. Now, we didn't grow up in, so to say, the great part of town. We grew up in what some people refer to as the ghetto. And there are aspects about the ghetto that have their negatives, most all of it. And my education, it was a tough place because obviously they're not optimal learning environments. And this was a big deal to my mother, who was a teacher. And so here I was in second grade, and she got a chance to walk the new school because our entire community was going to go to this new school named Schumacher Elementary. And she walked the halls, and she knew it was actually worse than the school we were in right now. And for me, I'm like, listen, I'm in second grade. My optimal learning environment was just a place where all my friends were together and we could have fun. That was what I wanted. But she came home that night and she said, no, that's not what I want for you. We're not going to be going to Schumacher, which was a big deal to me. She said, not only are we not going to Schumacher, we're moving. And we're going to have to make some cutbacks to do that. And I thought, okay. And she said, that means that there's not going to be hot lunches. That means no more toys, no ice cream truck. And from here on out, for lunches, you'll eat honey butter sandwiches, and for dinner, we'll eat baked beans or a big pot of spaghetti. That's why I don't even put honey on my biscuits to this day. I told them to get that on my face. And I will never forget when we pulled up to the new house and she hopped out the car, and it was this twinkle in her eyes as she was beaming, and she said, this is it. This is our new house. And she was so, so happy. And I wish I could say that we joined in that celebration with her, but we didn't join in because it was all so foreign to us, and she had ripped us away from everything that we knew, and we were just trying to figure out what this new world was all about. Little did we know, we were just embarking on a brand new journey in a brand new school. I'll never forget my first day of third grade. I can tell you what I was wearing. It was a turquoise Michael Jordan t-shirt. It had Air Joseph on the back. I thought this shirt was the bomb. I was like, people are going to be my friends just because the shirt is so cool. And I walked in and I remember thinking, wow, everything is just so different than what I pictured. Everyone looks so different. And the first thing I thought I had was, I hope my twin is close to me. But my mom knew that that's the way we thought. And so she had already told the school, hey, I want you to separate Justin and Joseph because I know they're going to hide behind each other. And I want them to be able to create their own friends and have their own identity. So I got to my first class and it was just me. And I still remember you could hear a pin drop. I got to the door and everyone turned and looked at me. And I walked in slowly. I walked to the back of the class and I searched for the S's and found it and I sat down. Little did I know, we were the only blacks at Monroe Elementary. It was the first thought I had of being different. Now, let me say that up until this point in my life, I had never seen that many white people in one place at one time in all my 8 years of existence. It was like walking into REI. I was like, what is happening right now? Okay. Is happening right now. And sure enough, I didn't know the TV shows. I didn't know the music. I didn't talk like them. I didn't even walk like them. I had a little strut to my walk. I'm like, hey, what's up? I was totally different in every single thing that I did. And anytime I had the thought of thinking that maybe I wasn't, I was faced with a jarring comment from one of my peers as they would tell me, oh no, you're very different. And they would begin to say and ridicule all the way as I talked and all the differences I had. And I began to be bullied. And I began to feel more and more and more of an outsider. And it only got worse as I went on. So you can only imagine that by fourth grade, the outgoing kid had all of a sudden quieted. I was scared of being teased. And the worst, I definitely didn't want to get in a fight. My mom had told us, it took a lot to get us out here. And you definitely are not going to ruin it by getting in a fight. Don't you swing on anybody at school. I said, okay. I made that agreement with her until the fifth grade. I hated being teased It wasn't hard to get me to snap. So here I was, fifth grade, and the teacher says, it's time for you to present your the projects you've been working on for about a week. Now, these were restaurants that we've been working on, and my thought was, this is the worst idea ever, because obviously students didn't like me. I was constantly bullied, so I stayed after class, and I said, hey, is there anything we could do? I really don't want to present. I don't know if you know, but I'm oftentimes bullied, and I don't like getting in front of students. This just, everything about it scares me. And she said, Joseph, I've actually thought about that. And I read your report, and I think it's awesome. And you put a lot of work into it. I think that this class deserves to hear all the work that you did. I said, well, it was pretty good. It's a pretty good restaurant. I think they do deserve to hear it, yeah. And I was convinced to present. Now, I should probably say that it was about 2 years that had passed, and I still had zero friends. There was one kid, Billy, who tried to be my friend, but he quickly realized that it was social suicide, so he aborted that quickly. I walked in behind him, and I caught him saying some absolutely horrible things about me one day in class. And he turned, and I still remember his eyes. It's as if they looked at me, and he was like, I'm sorry. And I just put my head down and walked to my desk. And when I sat down, I actually thought, you know, I hate that I put him through that. And I made the commitment that day that I would never attempt to try and make a friend again, because I never wanted to put anyone else through something like that. I would just go at it alone. So here I am, the day of presentation, fifth grade, in the last stall in the bathroom. And I'm praying. I'm like, that was my stall, y'all. I said, Lord Jesus, please, I want this presentation to go well. Please help nobody to bully me. Please help them to love everything about my restaurant and throw roses at my feet when I get done. Lord, I just want them to enjoy this. And please don't make me look stupid. Amen. It was a disaster. About 5 minutes into my presentation, I heard, question. You know, that obnoxious kid. There's always that kid in the class. You try to ignore him. His name was Jerry. Jerry. And I kept trying to give my presentation. Question. And I finally looked at him. I said, yes. And he asked a comment that was just absolutely horrible. He said, your pizza's at your restaurant. Do they have chitlins and watermelon on them? And it wasn't the comment that made me so upset. It was the fact that the entire class started roaring in laughter. I threw my board down, and I jumped over this table, and I grabbed his shirt. And just as I was getting ready to punch him, the teacher grabbed me, and she pulled me out in the hallway. And I was just screaming, and I was so upset. All I saw was red, and I'm just punching at the lockers. And then I turned to her, and I say, I told you that this would happen. Why did you make me do it? And I slid on the ground and started to cry. And I still remember what she said. She got right in front of me and she leaned down and she said, Joseph, how long are you gonna let them control you by their words? And I looked at her through my tears. I can't even get my breath right. And she says it again, how long are you gonna let them control you by their words? And then she gets up and just walks back in class. And her words echoed in my head all throughout the rest of that year and all through my brutal middle school years. Because the bullying got worse and worse and worse. I remember thinking, I don't know if I can take it, but I just remember her words. I thought, you know what? I can't let them control me with their words. I have to rise above. It got so bad that at the start of ninth grade, I walked into my basic metals class, and my teacher looked at me and he said, hey, listen, I need you to do all your projects outside. I heard how bad it is for you. I want you to go outside to do all your projects because there's a lot of equipment in here, and I don't want you to end up getting injured by the bullying. I need you to do all your projects outside. And I said, okay. And went out there to do them. And it worked for about 2.5 or 3 weeks until one kid got sick, and he went outside to check on the kid, which gave four guys an opportunity to come outside and jump me, and I was beaten that day. And I remember thinking, like, I can't take too much more of the altercations. It's like I couldn't catch a break from any student, and then every single time I thought it was bad with the students, I'd run into another teacher that would be a roadblock. And here I am, ninth grade French class. My mom always said, you can't get a C, and I had just done bad in a test, and I knew I got to get this grade up, because if I bring home a C, I know I'm in big trouble. So I stayed after, and I told her, I said, hey, is there any way that I can get some tutoring, because I want to make sure that I don't do bad on another test? I still remember she took her glasses off and she looked at me and she said, how am I supposed to teach you French when you don't even know English? And I just stood there and said, I'm sorry. And then I walked out. And that was the day I almost quit. I almost just quit caring. It was too much. My mom saw that she was losing her boys. She said, I got to do something. And she set up a meeting with the principal. She sat in front of him and she said, what else am I supposed to tell my boys? I'm telling them to turn the other cheek. I'm telling them to walk away, but it's like they can't catch a break. The principal looks at her and says, man, what did you expect would happen when you put him in this school? And she said, that was the end of the meeting. She came home that night and I could see it in her face. She went right to her room. And she came out and she said, I want to take you out of that school. It's time for you to transfer. Now, right around this time, my brother says, hey, what about this school named Firestone? And I'm thinking, come on, Firestone? I mean, it's way across town. It's 50-50 in diversity. I'm thinking, like, there's no way we're going to get in that school. It's 30 minutes away. It's just too big of a Hail Mary. Absolutely not. I was 6 years past dreaming. 6 years, no friends, no talking, apparently because I couldn't speak English. But we filled out the applications and sent them off, and I didn't think anything else of it. And I still remember the voicemail the day we got home, where they said, hey, this is Firestone. We want to let you know that we're excited to have you, your three boys, come. And I'm thinking, what? I don't even know how that could have possibly happened. Were things actually starting to change in my life? It's confusing. Almost as confusing as my first day of Firestone. When I walked in there, here I am, 10th grade. I walk through the front doors and I'm seeing whites and blacks in the hallways laughing, chatting, and chumming it up. And I'm thinking, what in the world? What kind of environment is this? It was so foreign to me. I put my head down and walked right to my class, first period, American history, and I came and sat right at my desk and I just sat there quietly. Didn't want anybody to see or notice me. A couple minutes later, a kid behind me with braids taps me. Tap, tap, tap. I look back, he's like, hey man, you got a pencil I can borrow? I was being tested, I knew it. He was trying to see if I'm a sucker, and I am not a sucker. I look back, I said, I ain't got no pencil. Tap, tap, tap. Oh, come on, man. You don't have an extra pencil? Just let me borrow it. I'll give it back to you at the end of class. And I did the first thing I thought to do. I had to make a statement. I jumped up from my desk and I knocked all the books off his desk. I said, I told you I ain't got no pencil. Don't go touching me again. And I was kicked out of my first year of class, just like that. First day. Now, the new school knew what kind of history we had, so they were gracious. And they allowed me to come back the next day. And I walked in, and I still remember what a girl said. She said, as I walked by, she said, that's the guy that flipped out over the pencil. He's crazy. And I thought, good. Good. At least they think I'm crazy, and at least no one's going to bother me now. We're now 7 years. No friends. No talking. But at least I still have my pencils. Now, the beauty of being quiet that long is you start seeing life play out all around you. You hear conversations happening. You hear friendships made and destroyed right in front of your face. You start realizing that the words that people say actually have a great impact. And I remember listening to conversations and thinking, why would she say that? Why would he say that? I thought they're supposed to be in love. Why would they act like that? If they wouldn't say that, then everything would just work out. You start learning to not just listen to what people say, but you start listening to the messages behind the words. Why people are saying what they say, the true meaning behind people's statements, still tools that I use to this day. So here I am, moving into my 11th grade year, and I remember I was walking out of my class, and I saw my twin. Now, he's 6'7", 200-something pounds, so needless to say, it's hard to miss him, and most coaches are going to go right for him as soon as he walked in. He was pretty popular instantly. And he was sitting there, and he was standing in the hallway laughing with some buddies. And I remember I just stopped and I looked. I had never in my life laughed in a hallway with friends. And I remember I went home that night and I said, God, I want nothing more than to have some friends that I can laugh with in the hallway and know that they're actually my friends. And my lights blinked, and a man lowered in a beard and a robe. Obviously, that didn't happen. I heard nothing, and so the next morning, I just made one simple decision because it's really all I knew. I said, I'm going to smile. I'm going to smile. If someone calls my name, I'll smile. If someone doesn't call my name, I'm just going to smile. If I see someone in the hallway, I'm just going to make eye contact, I'll smile. It's like, I want people to just see that I'm a nice guy. The plan backfired and everybody started calling me Kool-Aid. They're like, what up, Kool-Aid? And I'm like, ha, Kool-Aid. Who's Kool-Aid? Me? I'm Kool-Aid? Oh, no, wait. But sure enough, there are a couple people who realized, and they said, oh, you know, he's a really nice guy. And by the end of the year, I had two or three oddballs that were willing to hang with me and laugh in the hallway. By the end of that year, I started walking home, and we always had to walk to my aunt's house because my mom picked us up after she got off work and then drove us all the way back out to where we lived. And we were walking by a pizza shop. And sure enough, my friend said, "Hey, I'm going to run in and grab a piece of pizza." I said, "Okay, we'll wait for you out here." And he comes out a couple minutes later, and he's eating his slice of pepperoni pizza, and he has another greasy napkin of one, an extra slice right here, and he hands it to me. And I look at him, and I say, "What's this for?" He's like, "It's for you." And I was like, "For me?" He's like, "Yeah, it's for you." Like, "Why?" "Because it's pepperoni pizza, and I thought you'd like it." And I'm like, "But why did you buy me a piece?" He was like, "Dude, if you don't like the pizza, just give it back." But it wasn't just pizza to me. It's literally my first moment of realizing I had a friend that I can remember. It was the moment I really knew that somebody would think about me when I wasn't even standing there with them. People oftentimes say, "Where's the best pizza? What's the best pizza in town?" It's funny because every single time someone asks it, the first thought I have is that nasty, greasy piece of pizza that I had on the way home that tasted amazing. I got home that night and I was terrified. And I still remember I went to my room and I cried. I remember I looked up to God and I said this prayer, and it's still the only prayer I remember that I prayed to God, the only quote-unquote covenant that I made with him before he even knew how things worked. And I said, "Listen, God, I know that these friends are going to betray me like every other friend in my life. I know eventually they'll realize I'm toxic and they'll leave me. But if you just let them stay, I promise I will be the best friend they've ever had." To say that God answered that prayer would be an understatement. It was as if he had clouds surrounding me, and all of a sudden he cleared all the clouds out and shined the sun all the way down on me, and all of a sudden people just started to notice me. People started to want to be my friend, and everybody started saying, "Do you notice the nice kid, the new nice kid who wasn't even new?" People all of a sudden just wanted to be around me. And I thought, what is happening? And by the end of junior year, all of a sudden, I shudder to say, but I was popular. And I thought, what in the world? How did things change just like that? I'm moving into 12th grade. I had braces all the way since 8th grade. And that kind of came off. And I got some contacts, kind of changed up how I dressed a little bit. And I thought, okay, hopefully now I'm starting to look a little bit better. And it was kind of affirmed in my eighth period class when Yolanda looks at me and she says, "Oh my gosh, Joe, you cute." I said, "Oh, thank you. All right, 17 years in a crock pot, girl, get yourself a fork now." Weren't just looking at how I looked anymore. No, they weren't just looking at how I looked. They were actually listening to me. And people were actually saying, "We want to hear what you say. Joe, what are your thoughts on this?" And people were actually saying, "It's just the way you talk, the way that you see people, it's just totally different." And the teachers were coming to me and they said, "We want you to run Bookathon because for some reason students are listening to you. We don't even know what it is." I joined Romeo and Juliet so that I can get a chance to do some theater. I said, "Well, maybe people are listening. Maybe I can stand on stage and do it." But I remember I went to my theater director and I told him, I said, "Hey, there are no black plays, and this is 50% black school. Do you think we can possibly do some African-American plays in the future?" And he said, "Joe, I'll be honest with you. There are no blacks that come to the plays." And I said, "Okay, I'll make you a deal. If I can get blacks to come to Romeo and Juliet, do you think you'll consider doing African-American plays in the future?" He said, "Deal." We opened up doors and we sold out in 3 days. And to this day, Firestone High School does African-American plays every single year. But it didn't just stop there, because I said, "Hey, I want to go to Black United Students." And I sat there and I listened. I heard all the issues and I heard this and that about the dreams. And I thought, "Hey, guys, this is really awesome. But I got a question. Why are there no whites in here? I mean, if we have issues and we have dreams and then they have issues and they have dreams, wouldn't it be good if we all got in one room together and they could say their issues and dreams and we could say our issues and dreams? Then we can all start working together to see if we can make a better place for all of us. After all, we're all in one school. Maybe we should take the black off of it and just call it United Students. What do you think?" It didn't work at all. Didn't work at all. Teachers looked at me and they thought, "He's crazy." And I was a little crazy. So I said, "Okay, when's election?" They said, "About a month from now." I went to my friend. I said, "Lauren, I need you to think. I need you to dream with me. I think you can be the president of Black United Students. I want you to really think about it. I think this is definitely the position for you. I need you to run for me." She's like, "Joe, okay, I'm white though." I said, "I know, I didn't notice, but listen." I said, "Here's why it's so awesome." And I told her something. I said, "All you need to do is listen.
If you just listen to the issues and listen to the dreams and then speak to that, I think people won't even notice you're white. She said, you think? I was like, yeah. She ran. It was a glorious day. The day those teachers walked in with those ballots tallied up and they looked at me. Whole room full of whites and blacks just waiting. They announced Laura as the president of Black United Students. And the entire room starts roaring, and I'm watching blacks and whites hugging and high-fiving it out. And Laura looks at me, and her eyes are wide, and she just walks and hugs me. And she's crying, and she says, I can't believe it. And I'm literally at a loss for words. I don't even know what to say. Because it was the moment that everything in my life started to make sense. See, I tell people now, when you're in the jungle by yourself and nobody's talking to you, you dream of people. When you're in the jungle by yourself, you dream for people. The reason why God had put me there is he wanted to kind of craft me differently. You're going to so desperately want people that for the rest of your life, you're going to fight for people. And all those prayers that I did in that last stall when they were unanswered, that was just conditioning. Learning about a relationship before I even understood what a relationship really was. My simple choice to smile was just me saying, you know what? I'm going to let people know that there's still some joy left in here. I'm not a monster. Sometimes just small decisions, the small words said can make the biggest impacts in our life. That's based on a true story. Here I was, standing in front of an entire class of people that had done something special. And I thought, wow, if that's not using our words to make a difference. A couple weeks ago, I went into Waffle House, and it's my local Waffle House, so they all know me. My favorite waitress is Twy, and she knows my order. She says, all-star, blueberry, waffle, sausage, grits, raisin toast. I said, you got it. Now, come on now. Stop playing. Come on. Bring it. She puts my cup down. She starts filling up my coffee. There was a lady sitting beside me, about middle-aged. I could tell that she had a rough day, maybe a rough night, I'm not quite sure, but she was looking a little disheveled. And so I glanced over and I said, hey. And glanced back. And then I turned back and I said, I'm sorry, I don't think I caught your name. My name is Joseph. What's yours? She said, Ann. I said, nice to meet you, Ann. And I turned back. A couple minutes passed and she looked and she said, Joseph, what do you do? And I said, oh, well, I actually work at a church. A church. Yeah. And for the next 20 minutes, Ann starts telling me all these stories about how churches had betrayed her and how she made bad decision after bad decision and how she wishes she could go back, but she just still has all this resentment for the fact that while she made those mistakes, the church wasn't there for her. And instead of loving her, they judged her. And she said, but listen, I still love Jesus. I don't want you to think I don't love Jesus. And I said, no, I totally understand, but can I ask you a question? She said, yeah. I said, do you think every church is bad? She said, well, no, not every church, but most of them. I said, okay, that's all I wanted to know. And she said, well, listen, now, I want you to know that when I run into people and they're going through tough times, I tell them, hey, you need to go to church. You definitely need to go to church. I mean, I don't go, but I tell them they need to go to church. And then she said something that rocked my world. She said, and I'm a firm believer that sometimes the most called people in the church are the ones that never hear their names called on stage. I said, excuse me? She said, I said, I'm a firm believer that the most called people in the church are the ones that never hear their name called from stage. And I turned to her, and I reached out. She looked at me, I said, can I have your hand? She put her hand, and I said, Ann, we need you at our church. She pulled back, she said, oh, no, that's not for me. I said, Ann, we need you at our church. And she said, why? You're going to make me cry. Why? And I said, because we don't have your story at our doors. And we need that story. That's why I read about them, was filling up her coffee. She said, girl, go to that boy's church. It's a good church. Y'all right, go get yourself a tip now. That's why I come on now. We walked out of that Waffle House in the parking lot, and she started telling me, you know what? If this church is like you, I think I'll give it a shot.
And I said, oh, this church is just like me. And she said, well, I want to know when you're preaching because I want to be there for when you're preaching. I said, let me tell you a secret. The guy that preaches when I'm not preaching is pretty good. You just come for him. He'll take care of you. And she said, okay, well, what time's our time? I said, when is time? And I said, well, it's 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 4:30, 6. She said, oh, my goodness, that must be a big church. I said, we're rather large. She said, well, I'm going to come. And then she got in her car, and I walked to mine. And she started pulling out the parking lot, and she stopped, and she let her window down. And she said, you know, I don't even know what made me tell you all that. I never tell people all of that. And I looked at her, and I smiled, and I said, oh, I know why. Because it's your story. It's your story. And for the first time, you bumped into the church, and you felt comfortable enough to be honest, which in turn made you confident enough to tell your story. And I said, that's the kind of church I go to. Because every single week, they gather in homes, and we have real conversations. Real stories are shared. And the first thing people say is, hey, can I hear your story? And people at this church, they feel confident in that. They feel comfortable enough to say, yeah, it's going to be some ugly parts. There's going to be some parts that are going to make you cringe. But here I am. And then we love on them. We call that an invest and invite model. Smiled and drove off. I hope she came. But if I had another shot to tell anything, I would say, hey, listen, you never asked me my story. Here's the beauty of what I can tell you. Week after week, I get a chance to stand on a stage and I say, hey, welcome to North Point Community Church. We are so excited that you're joining us. And right then and there, I get butterflies in my stomach because I think I can't even believe that I'm standing here saying that. Because, and there was one point in my life where I didn't think anybody wanted to hear what I said. There was one point in my life where I didn't think I was worth anything, but somebody said something really, really small that completely changed my entire mindset that allows me to stand here. And then, and I'm going to tell you a secret. This is something I do that no one else knows. Every single time I walk on this stage and welcome people, I take a quick glance at that back corner right there because I don't know who's sitting there, but somebody could be sitting there and hearing it for the first time the same way I did, and maybe what I'm saying is going to impact them. And then, and I had this beautiful moment where I can say, and if this is your first time at North Point, we are so glad that you decided to spend your time with us. The kid who was once too afraid to ever say a word, who felt like he had no worth, all of a sudden realizes that if this is going to be the greatest church in the land, that this has to be a place where we understand that everyone has a story. We're all based on a true story. And everyone has the right to tell their story. Maybe it's as simple as me asking you what your name is and introducing myself, a luxury that I never had. Maybe it's as simple as a piece of pizza. I'd love to pray for us. God, it's so easy for us to walk about these days wearing our masks. It's scary for us to take them down and start telling people and showing people the real us. We'd rather go about acting, saying how we wish our life really was. God, there's something so beautiful about having a church where we can literally walk in and be honest, be comfortable and be confident in just sharing our stories. God, it's a special place that anyone who walks in these doors can walk into a body of believers and non-believers that are on one accord, love. God, that's got to make this the best church in the land. Thank you for everyone sitting in these seats. Thank you for the stories, beautiful and ugly. Thank you for the stories that have been had and the stories that are yet to come. Because we're a church that lives on that, unashamed and willing to say, hi, I'd love to hear you. It's in these things we continue to ask in your precious Son's name. Amen.